Today, President Obama's second-term challenge in a nutshell. Talk to Main Street and soothe Wall Street at the same time. From APM, I'm Jeff Horwich. This is the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for November 9th. Happy Friday, everybody. We'll talk about the president's speech today, Apple's stock slide. We'll look at how they're bringing back the 70s in post-Sandy New York. We'll also talk pot legalization and talk about the economic niche where candy and antiperspirant meet. Yum.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
As I speak to you this moment, President Obama is about to take to the microphone, and he's surely going to talk about the fiscal cliff, those automatic spending cuts and tax hikes set to kick in with the new year, unless he and Congress cut a deal. If you've been listening to the podcast at all, you're quite an expert on it at this point. House Speaker John Boehner has proposed finding a temporary fix for the fiscal cliff and putting off the long-term budget questions for next year. In his own speech this morning, Boehner called on President Obama, though, to lead the conversation. One question for Obama this morning is whether he can soothe investors who engaged in kind of a two-day post-election freakout. Over the last 2 days, the Dow lost more than 3%. Gus Fauché is senior economist with the PNC Financial Services Group. Hey, Gus.
Good morning.
What, if anything, do you think the president can say to maybe instill a little confidence in the markets?
Well, presumably the president will lay out some principles for deficit reduction, and then he'll indicate a flexibility in working with Congress on this. I think there's a, you know, there's serious concern about the impact of going over the fiscal cliff on the economy, and I think the president will indicate that he really does want a solution to this and isn't looking to pick a fight.
So do you think the wise words of a politician can really have much effect on the opinion or actions of investors at this point?
No, I don't think so. I mean, obviously, the president's going to indicate some flexibility, but until there's an actual indication that Congress and the administration are working together on this, I think markets are going to remain anxious. It's one thing for the president to say that he's going to work with Congress. It's quite another to actually reach a deal. I'm hopeful that that will be the case, but I think markets are going to have to wait and see if there actually is some progress.
And just quickly, there's a CBO report in the mix here as well. What did that tell us?
The CBO report came out yesterday. It indicates that the full effect of going over the fiscal cliff would basically push the U.S. economy back into recession. The combination of tax increases and spending cuts would be a significant weight on economic growth. We'd see the unemployment rate move higher, and the economy would likely contract in the near term.
All right, a little kick in the rear, maybe. Gus Fauché, senior economist at the PNC Financial Services Group. Thanks, as always.
Thank you.
So, just ahead of the president's speech, let's check the numbers. Well, the numbers are up this morning, reversing the slide of the last 2 days. The Dow is up about 0.5%. The S&P 500 and the NASDAQ are both up less than 1%, but even more than the Dow. Consumer confidence for this first part of November has hit a new high, the best in 5 years, says the Thomson Reuters University of Michigan Index. Respondents are increasingly optimistic, evidently, about employment and the overall economic outlook. Through the campaign, President Obama tried to match Mitt Romney's tough talk on China. And this morning, U.S. trade officials approved an investigation into whether Chinese companies are dumping plywood on the U.S. market at below market prices. And how's this for a little bit of a turnabout? There are reports this morning that the Chinese manufacturer Foxconn, you know, they make Apple iPads and a whole lot else besides, that Foxconn is looking at setting up plants in Detroit and Los Angeles. The source is the Taiwanese IT news site DigiTimes, which says Foxconn is looking to the U.S. to make relatively simple things, actually, like LCD TVs, for example. And that sounds a little bit odd, doesn't it? All of us talented Americans. But the truth is that simpler products can mostly be made by robots. And robots are considerably cheaper than actual Americans. But we do have a lot of Americans who know how to run the robots. So there you go. That report, by the way, thoroughly unconfirmed from DigiTimes, but interesting. We will see. There have been brisk sales of the iPhone 5 and plenty of hoopla around the iPad mini and the new iPad version made by, of course, Foxconn. But Apple's stock has been on a downward slide lately. It's lost more than 20% of its value since a peak in September. It's not that investors are really worried about sales so much as something more existential, you might say. Here's Marketplace's Queena Kim.
The big question for investors is, has Apple lost its soul? Trip Chowdhury is an analyst at Global Equities Research.
1 year after Steve Jobs' passing, what has Apple accomplished? Nothing. What groundbreaking product they have brought to the market? nothing.
Chaudhry voices a belief that's common among investors. The day Apple stops introducing gee-whiz products, it's dead. Viewed through that lens, the iPhone 5 and iPad mini were disappointments. There was also the failure of Apple Maps. And last month, software engineer Scott Forstall, one of Apple's most prolific inventors, left the company.
I think it's too early to say that Apple's days are over.
Anil Doradla is an analyst at William Blair. He says Apple still dominates the tablet market, and consumers are still hot for iPhones.
All right, we go away from Apple to what?
Doradla says until another company starts producing groundbreaking products, he's giving Apple more time. I'm Queenie Kim for Marketplace.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
While some filling stations in the Northeast wait for a little bit more precious fuel to come along, gas rationing is in place in New Jersey and now in New York. New York just put their system in place this morning. And both states are borrowing a system from the late 70s oil crisis. License plates that end in an even number get to fill up on even days, and odd plates fill up on odd days. Simple. Marketplace's Dan Bobkoff went to a gas station in Manhattan this morning, where today the odds are getting their turn at the pump.
The rationing plan was announced just yesterday, which is why some drivers, like Aminul Islam, haven't yet gotten the memo.
So are you trying to beat the rationing that starts at 6?
Rationing?
Others like Eva Jakubowski were up early. She has to get to Pennsylvania today, but her license plate ends in an even number.
I'm hoping that they're not going to turn me away at 6 because I have an 8 at the end of my license plate.
Yeah.
Drivers waited anywhere from 30 minutes to 2 hours to fill up at this station on Manhattan's west side. A team of cops kept things orderly.
Now back up that way. Back up that way. Go out that way.
Gas rationing has been in place in New Jersey for about a week. It came today to New York City and parts of Long Island because supplies just haven't come back fast enough in the Northeast. Hurricane Sandy knocked out refineries and parts of the distribution network. The nor'easter this week didn't help matters either. New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg says the gas shortage could last another couple of weeks. In New York, I'm Dan Bobkoff for Marketplace.
Public transportation in the Northeast has crawled back to life since Superstorm Sandy, but for many folks, private transportation remains a challenge, even beyond the gas rationing we just talked about. The storm destroyed some 250,000 cars, and all of us could feel the effects of that, as Stacey Vanek Smith reports.
If you're in the market for a used car, you might be in for a little bit of sticker shock. Hurricane Sandy is expected to tack $200 to $300 onto the price. That's according to Jonathan Banks with the National Automobile Dealers Association.
Many vehicles are going to be destroyed, which means that many consumers are going to have to replace their cars.
Some of them will opt to buy used cars, which could squeeze an already tight supply, says Richard Arca, a senior analyst with Edmunds.com.
The problem with used cars over the past couple of years is a lack of inventory.
Many Americans put off buying new cars during the recession. Now the number of used cars 7 years and younger is at an all-time low. Again, analyst Jonathan Banks.
This impact will wash across the whole country and people will feel the price increases as far out as California.
That's because auto dealers in storm-hit areas will start pulling in used cars from all over the U.S. to meet the demand. Banks says we've seen this before. Hurricane Katrina pushed used car prices up 3% nationally. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
On Tuesday, voters in Colorado and Washington approved different versions of legalized recreational marijuana. Sure, there's a big, fat lifestyle element to this story, but it's also about economics. The idea is that by taking underground drug dealing and making it legit, you grow an industry in the light of day, one that can be regulated and taxed. Mark Kleiman is a professor of public policy at UCLA, and he's co-author of the book Marijuana Legalization, What Everyone Needs to Know. Good to talk with you.
Thanks very much.
What kind of recreational marijuana industries, and on what scale, would you see arising in the wake of these laws?
I think the most likely result is no industry at all, because the federal government will not permit it. So here's the problem from the point of view of both Colorado and Washington. They propose regulated legal markets, which means that people who want to produce or distribute or sell at retail need to get licenses, and they need to apply for those licenses. And those applications are public record. That means that the federal government could go into the federal district court with the applications and say to the judge, Your Honor, these people are applying for permission to commit a federal felony. Please tell them not to. And then an injunction issues saying you can't pick up that license. And since under the state law, nothing can legally happen anyplace else, so much for that industry.
Do you see any crucial difference between how this is likely to play out in Colorado versus Washington?
So in Washington, it'll be illegal to do anything it's illegal to do now, except if you hold one of these state licenses. In Colorado, there's another provision of the law, which I think turns out to be the important provision, which is that anyone in Colorado will have permission under Colorado law to grow pot or to give it away for free up to an ounce at a time. That doesn't require a state license, and therefore there's no record of who's doing it.
So you would expect a lot more activity in Colorado?
I would expect a lot more activity in Colorado, particularly because the giving it away for free notion is an interesting one. I think it's going to be very hard to prevent the development of an informal market of people growing the stuff, you know, more or less at home and selling to their buddies. And that's something the state government could do something about. But the federal government simply doesn't have the capacity. And that's just going to be under the federal radar. That's going to be a reason for the federal government to allow Colorado to set up a legal regulated market, because the alternative is a completely illegal unregulated market.
Mark Kleiman at UCLA, author of Marijuana Legalization, What Everyone Needs to Know. Mark, thanks.
Take care. Bye.
And just an interesting side note, I kid you not, that interview was booked and recorded this morning at 4:20. Those of you who get the reference will find that just freakishly bizarre, as I did. Those who don't, here's something else provocative to wrap things up. Yesterday, I told you about a new body odor test that is being instituted for some Chinese airline pilots. Well, today comes news of a solution, maybe, from Central Europe. The Guardian reports a Bulgarian company is about to start distributing its peculiar deodorant candy, if you can imagine that, in the U.S. and in the Far East, including China. One piece of Dio perfume candy is what it's called. Apparently leaves you smelling like a rose, literally, for up to 6 hours. It's worth pointing out that despite the appetizing name, the stuff apparently tastes like tangerine and not Old Spice. That's all for today's Marketplace Midday Update podcast. I'm Jeff Horwich, and this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.